former All-American football player, male model, daytime soap stud, from the bold and the beautiful, Mr. Windsor Harmon, next on The Culture Catch.
There ain't a lot that you can do in this town. You drive down to the lake and then you turn back around.
Windsor, thanks for coming on The Culture Catch.
Yeah, my pleasure, all the way.
You know, I think there's a lot of misconceptions about actors who work in your profession, mm-hmm. in the soap opera. I hate to use that term, soap opera profession, but it's incredibly intense and a lot of work.
Yeah, it is. It's one of the hardest mediums, and it's very funny because I worked with them when I was doing All My Children many years ago. They hired a doctor to play my doctor on the show, Anthony Robbins. Tony Robbins?
Oh, sure, yeah.
Remember Tony?
Yeah.
Tony comes on, and he's, you know, that stigma of daytime and you know, watch it, but what we do is we shoot one episode a day, sometimes two episodes. So we're doing 30 to 60 pages a day. Where in a movie or a nighttime show that airs a 1 hour episodic, you got 8 days to shoot it. We do it in one day. So he came on. He goes, I have the most respect for you guys now after having to do this, because he had to memorize like 30 pages of dialogue, and I'd come in without a script and run the lines with him, and he'd be, you already know the dialogue? Yeah, I learn it if I read it one time.
So I don't know how you guys do that, man. That freaks
you know
me
what?
Out.
The brain is a muscle, and I guess the more you work it, the more it's going to respond. But you know, you learn your character. You know what your character does. You know what the scene's about. So it kind of makes sense that it that you can pick it up.
But do the writers give you leeway with the lines, or can they be like real ballbusters?
Well, you know, there's certain people that can get away with it that are, you know, they don't say anything too. But if you're new on the show, no, you need to stick with the script. But no, I work from a very organic state. I don't like to rehearse. I like to do it. I like to hear it for the first time and make it organic. That's how I like to work, because that's what you do in real life. You don't have any idea what I'm going to say next, and you have to listen. And you listen to me, and you respond. And that's what I like to do on a set. I don't like to hear their lines. I learn mine, and I want to hear it for the first time, and I just want that organic thing to happen. And as we call it, you know, Alec Baldwin calls it, leaving your feet, and that's what it is. It's and when that happens, it's the reward that you get from acting.
So there's more truth in the reaction,
mm-hmm.
like you said.
Absolutely. Yeah. You have to be a good listener to be a good actor, I believe. That's what I think.
Did you ever envision yourself moving into this area of acting when you were struggling? You know, you were a model. Played football, Texas A&M.
It's funny because I did my first play in the second grade. I did a musical called The Wells Fargo Wagon. And I remember, and I have a picture of it, my mother does to this day, of being up there on stage, and it was over. And the audience was clapping, and everybody left but me. And I'm standing there looking at the audience, and they're clapping. And I was 5 years old, 6 years old. I remember that feeling.
Was an addictive.
It never left me, yeah. I guess. Yeah. Then when I got to playing football, when I started playing football, I was very fortunate. God gave me some good abilities to run the football. My first game on the varsity level, I scored 4 touchdowns, 280 yards on 12 carries. 200 yards came in the first half on 6 carries.
Holy.
With an average of 35 yards. So I was.
Were you playing a cream tough team?
No.
Cream
no, we were playing a team. We were 4A, and this team was 5A.
Wow.
Yeah. And I don't know what happened. I just went nuts and wound up being recruited. I was one of the top running backs in the nation that year. I was recruited by Nebraska. I mean, you know, how many kids can say that Tom Osborne was in your living room with a Nebraska jersey with your number on it, you know?
How did you turn that down, bro?
But I did, because of my girlfriend. I wound up going to Texas A&M. Jackie Sherrill took over Texas A&M that year and came in, and he coached Dorsett,
sure.
who was number 33. And I have to say that he smooth-talked me right into having to get up the next morning, call Tom Osborne, and say, I'm going to go to Texas A&M.
Ooh. And, how'd you guys fare when you were on Texas A&M against those boys?
You know what? We did not play them.
Really?
I know that our first game, Oklahoma State came in and Barry Sanders, and they beat the shit out of us on national television.
Well, I guess if you're going to lose to somebody, Barry's not a bad guy to lose to, man.
You know, I have his jersey. signed, framed in my son's room.
Wow.
I'm a big fan of Barry Sanders.
Yeah, is it, you know, the way our society is built, athletes are pop culture icons.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I mean, television has helped make them icons.
Yep.
So moving from sports to the world you're in now, that probably wasn't a difficult transition. You're used to the scrutiny of the media and respect.
Well, I know one thing. When I did that first game my junior year in Rockwall, Dallas, I was picked as Dallas Morning News, Dallas Times Herald, Player of the Week, and this or that, and all the news crews came out, and I was on the news constantly, and you know, I was in front of the camera, and I fell in love with it. And then I remember going to buy a pair of shoes at the Athlete's Foot, or the Foot Locker, whatever it was, in Town East Mall. And I walked in, and the girl behind the counter goes, "Oh, you're that guy from the running back from Rockwall. I saw you on the news last night." And man, I was with my couple of friends, and I thought, "This is where I want to be."
Yeah.
And it's an exhilarating. I don't know. It's just, I think it's something that has to be born with you to want to do this. Because first of all, as an athlete, you have to take the good with the bad. You get beat up. You take the injuries and everything like that. With an actor, you got to take rejection.
Yeah,
I can't tell you how many times I've gone into offices. I've had casting directors call my agent and say, "I don't know how you can represent this kid. He needs to go back to New York and be a sell boots."
Seriously.
Seriously. Oh yeah. Mm-hmm.
How do you get up each morning and just say, "I got to keep going, man"? You have the soul of a warrior. You're the soul of an artist. You're an actor, and that's it. You put the blinders on and you just.
Well, you know, we all have, you know, any actor tells you he doesn't have an ego is full of shit.
Right.
We have huge egos beyond belief, and they do get bruised. There's no doubt about it. I think it's a thing that you have to get calloused with, and you know, I know me, and I remember when I first started this business. I was in I had left Texas A&M, and I knew that I wanted to do it. And I didn't. I got tired of waking up and having to get in shots and getting a jacuzzi to walk. And I happened to be in Dallas, and one of the people from Nike was in the bar and asked me, would you thought about modeling? And of course, I'd laughed. I said, "Modeling's for She goes, "No, but you can make about $1,500 a day." And of course, I took a step back and said, "Where do I sign up?"
Exactly.
But I wound up doing that. But to get back to my story, I had the makeup artist take me to an agency, Kim Dawson Agency in Dallas, Texas. And I went in to meet with her. It was either her daughter or whatever. And she said, "No, you could never be a model because you're too big." And I said, "Well, what do you have to do to be a model?" She goes, "Well, you need to be in a 40 regular and a 32 waist." Now, mind you, I was 225 pounds and, you know, I had a 46-inch chest, 36-inch waist, running back. And I said, okay. I said, "Not only will I be a model, but I'm gonna go with your competitor." So I walked out. 9 months later, I went on a program, a vegetarian program. I got up every morning. I ran 5 miles in the morning. I ran 5 miles in the evening. And I ate nothing but brown rice, black beans, and vegetables. And I drank water. And I got down to a 40 regular jacket, and I got to a 31-inch waist.
Damn.
And I wound up being...
I would not recommend that to a 60-year-old mm-mm. man today.
I wound up getting sent to New York and signed with Ford. Did the Halston campaign with Cindy Crawford. Became the Marlboro man for 3 years. And
that's
Kim Dawson never made a dime off of me.
Kim, I'm sorry if you're listening to this. I'm sure there's a lot of stories about a lot of boys and girls that have those rejection moments.
I have no
turn it around.
I don't have any hard feelings against Kim. I'm glad that they said that because it lit the fire. Do it. Yeah.
It lit the fire.
Yeah.
Now, here's the thing, man. You know, you went to New York. Mm-hmm. Why not write to L.A.? Because the modeling is more serious in New York?
Yeah, that's where the hub of it is. I mean,
and you got the European connection with the
right
modeling?
Right there, yeah. And well, an agent had come into Dallas from Zoli. Is it Zoli? Yeah, Zoli in New York. And this woman was just amazing. And she called me and called me and called me and said, "I thought you were coming to New York, you know?" And I was afraid. I mean, I'd never been out of Rockwall, Texas, or New Orleans, Louisiana. And, you know, I was 19 years old. And it was like New York City. I'd always heard, you know, these things about New York and how dangerous Central Park was and everything like that. And so I finally did. And it was an education that you couldn't buy. And it became one of my favorite places in the world. And the people of New York are, you know, second to none. It'll make, you know what, you either live or die in New York. There's no sub, there's no medium there, man. It's a fast-paced place.
So when you were there and you're modeling, the acting thing was still
out,
the theater thing.
I knew that I could make a living doing the modeling, and at the time I was studying, and I was using that money to study. And then I knew that I wanted to be in television for sure. I wasn't really that big of a movie person at the time. But television has always been, I mean, I remember when Miami Vice came on. Every Friday night, I had a cigarette in my hand and I had a glass of scotch. And I watched Sonny Crockett, because my nickname was Sonny from birth. It's my father's junior. I'm Windsor Harmon III.
Right.
So my nickname was Sonny. So, and everybody called me Sonny. And I literally became Don Johnson.
Did you have his cuts, man?
I had everything, man.
The linen suits?
I had everything.
Yeah.
I walked around Miami, I'm telling you, in Atlanta, oh, shit, everywhere man. I went, I was Sonny Crockett.
South Beach,
I had the same haircut.
Oh,
I mean, I'm not kidding you, man. And I took that character on, and I wanted to, that's what I wanted to do.
That hero worship can be dangerous to business.
Yeah, it really can. But yeah, he was one of my driving forces that made me want to do it.
Now the acting thing in New York. Do you feel it's a different animal than it is in L.A. for the actor because of the history of the theater?
Yeah, it's a whole different genre, without a doubt. Because you do. I think anybody that's in Broadway that comes out to California is, you know, very well respected.
It's got a little.
You have to.
Somewhat of a leg up, perhaps.
Absolutely. Yeah, you have to. Yeah. But you know, it's a big difference between Broadway and doing film, because you know the camera catches everything to the eyes, as they say, the eyes are the soul, the mirror to the soul. Broadway is big, you know, and you'll see. You know, it's to do both mediums is, you know, it's a difficult thing to do.
That's the ultimate compliment, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
And then moving into the area of daytime television, mm-hmm. where the serious actor has a very difficult time transitioning into the serious film world.
Yeah.
That's got to be rather daunting.
The thing with daytime is that it's a very difficult medium. And what happens is there's a lot of beginners that start on daytime, including myself was one of them. So you're not going to see the finest acting in television, obviously. But the thing is, you are doing 60 pages a day. So you're doing a 1 hour episodic every single day, compared to nighttime television where an actor comes in and they've got 8 days to shoot 2 pages. They shoot 2 pages a day. I mean, we don't have the luxury of time to shoot that much. We do pretty much our stuff is done in one take. And you've got to learn, go home that night and learn 30, 40 more pages, come back the next day and shoot it and do it again. So it's like being in college. It's like I compare it to a med student.
You're always
in med school, constantly.
Yeah.
And your weekends, you can't go out and just, I'm going to go out and just get, you know, have a bash, because Sunday, you got to study for Monday. I mean, you have to do it. But every actor that has been on, you know, like I said, Anthony Robbins, who came on, they have a very profound respect for what we do in this medium, because it's a very difficult medium and it's hard to get a hold of.
Well, how about the men and women that stay, like you? You've been on for what, 15 years?
I didn't
now?
Plan that. Yeah.
And that's a testament to your work ethic, I think. You're not going to stick around if you're not.
No, you're not. No, you have to do your homework. Yeah, you really do.
What other big misconceptions are there about daytime television besides the work ethic?
Everybody has good breath.
You know what? I guess people don't think about that, right? Do you have somebody on the side, you know? Like
we
the fluffer
mints,
girls.
We have mints. We have mouthwash.
Yeah, you're getting up that early, man. You can have some cotton mouth, right? Some cotton breath.
We're fortunate. We have a great cast, and it's a very tight knit group of people. And
you guys are number one in daytime, right?
Number one in the world.
Number one in the world.
Over
now, see, that's
every
something
other
that
show
I,
in the world.
I think you, the average working person in New York City. You guys are anonymous to them.
Yeah.
They don't know what's going on in this world. And you've got a devoted...
We literally cannot... It's funny. And I never even... I didn't know it when I started the show, because I really wasn't familiar with the show when I was asked if I wanted to take over this role, which I, you know, gladly obliged. But we went to Italy for the first time to shoot for 2 weeks over in Portofino. Matter of fact, the house that George Clooney bought was owned by the Heinz, and they threw us a pizza party, a pizza making party at that house. I know that house very well because we were staying over at the Villa d'Este. But we went in town they were shooting there that day, and we went in town to do a group photo. And they literally had barriers up, these, you know, the big fence barriers. The people broke it down. They had the police there. We almost got... It was dangerous. I mean, it was probably 6,000, 7,000 people showed up, and it scared me. for the first time.
Those Italians are passionate.
They are.
The transition, you do other things besides mm-hmm. you're a singer-songwriter. Mm-hmm. You know, you wear your Texas flag proudly on your sleeve.
Yeah.
You wave that flag. You've
yep.
got some country records.
I grew up with, you know, George Strait, Johnny Cash. I had dinner not too long ago with,
Nashville, Tennessee.
I'm a member of the country club. Travis Tritt.
Travis Tritt.
Sorry, TT.
He's great, man.
Oh, I love him. He is.
His
just
manager's out here, I think, right? He used to have an
Gary
LA base.
Falcon, yeah. I think he. He and Gary split, actually.
Did?
Yeah, I know his publisher.
Travis is a great
Travis.
Player.
He gets
How about
up on
Trace
stage
Adkins?
And Trace is great.
He's LSU boy.
Yeah, that's true.
Another football player.
Yeah, I just saw him at the CMAs not too long ago, actually. Yeah.
Trace is good. He's a good guy.
Yeah. I follow the guys who keep it country.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Well, it's a hard word to define today in the scheme of things.
Well, when you got up there, and I have nothing against Big and Rich. They're great. But the rapping thing is not country.
Yeah,
it is. It's hip-hop. It's not country.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, country is steel guitars. It's twang, and it's, you know, it's singing about trains, trucks, mama, and whatever else.
For me, George Strait is still
the best.
He's been passed the torch, and
Alan Jackson.
Alan Jackson.
And
Alan Jackson played CBGB's in New York a couple
years
ago.
Did he really? Wow.
And people went crazy.
I imagine.
Because Hilly Kristal, who owns CBGB's, CBGB stands for Country, Bluegrass, and Blues. He is a country freak, Hilly.
Wow.
You know, he's in his 70s now, and he originally had opened that joint to really give a home to roots rock in New York City because he felt like there was no venues there. But then the punks took it over because it was such a tough area. So when
there's
Alan
no
Jackson,
line in music anymore.
No, it's all, you know. The Nashville radio is a much different radio than you and I were growing up.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I mean, I don't think a guy like Merle Haggard could get played.
Can you imagine? He couldn't.
No, Johnny Cash would shot a man in Reno to watch him die. They'd never play that.
Boy Named Sue? No.
Yeah.
You don't hear it.
Yeah.
You don't hear it now. But Brad Paisley, thank God for him.
Can he play guitar or what? People forget.
Keith Urban's a hell of a guitar player.
Yeah, Keith Urban is too, man. He really is. Although he's from Australia.
He's a little poppy. That's all right. He's a little poppy.
We'll let him
in.
He's in the club, right? Now, there's a lot of great country music.
Gretchen Wilson.
I love Gretchen Wilson.
I leave my Christmas lights up.
Julia Roberts. Julie Roberts. Have you heard her?
No.
She was working, I met her.
Julie Roberts?
Yeah.
I'm thinking of the actress.
Not Julia Roberts. Julie Roberts. Was working at, I think, Mercury Records in Nashville. And, you know, had been plugging along and somebody heard her sing and they went crazy.
Wow.
Check her out.
You know,
like
there's one thing about country music that I have to say. There's no, you either sing or you can't sing. There's no Britney Spears. There's no absolutely the most untalented Ashley Simpson. And I'm saying that because it's ridiculous that our kids, because I have kids, that, you know, are getting caught up in this crap. Is what it is.
Well, in country music, you're not using an auto tuner.
No, you're not. You know, in Pro Tools, you know,
you're not editing around. You know, you go to a country show and you see, you know, I've seen some big shows. I'm a big Dwight Yoakam fan.
Yeah,
now, I know he kind of exists outside the fringe because he's an LA guy.
Yep. And Travis is the same way.
And I guess Keith is to an extent, even though he's been embraced there. But you go see those guys play live.
There's no
overdubs.
No, there's no
auto-tuning.
There's no lip-syncing crap.
No.
There's none of that. It's just, it's you either sing or you don't.
The music doesn't overwhelm the vocals.
You can't make a country singer. Yeah, exactly.
The vocals are front and center always.
Always. George Strait is like,
So were you always writing and singing when you were coming up?
Singing, yeah. Not really writing. I never, I don't have the talent that, you know, I have the utmost, as an actor, I have the utmost respect for writers. Because it's something that God has given you. It's something that wherever it came from, I don't know. I don't have that imagination as a writer. I get tunes in my head. I can pick it up on the guitar and things like that. But I don't know. I never have been a person that can write. I can co-write with people. I mean, they can give me the idea, you know, or the song, and I can come up with the hook or things like that, but I don't have that talent.
Is there a stigma attached to the fact that a lot of actors aren't allowed to be multidimensional?
Absolutely.
You can't be a singer, man.
Absolutely.
Come on, man. You're an actor.
Exactly.
You played football. You can't be a singer.
Absolutely.
How do you persuade people?
Man, I, you know,
Or do you just worry about it as an individual? No, you don't.
You just got to do what you want to do. I mean, I was completely shut out of Nashville big time because, you know, when we went to Capitol Records with it, and Capitol Records was working with us on this record, they the first thing they said to Nashville, why didn't he do the record here? Well, number one, I work 5 days a week on a show.
You got a contract.
16 hours a day, and I got a contract, and I don't have the luxury of going to Nashville. Believe me, I would love to go to Nashville and do a record, absolutely. But
you want to take that?
It's just not going to happen. I think as an individual, you just literally have to, you know, you can't worry about what anybody else says, and you just have to do it. I was approached to do the record. It's something I've always wanted to do because I grew up listening to country music, something I've always wanted to do. And I was approached to do it, and I did it. And, you know, it's he's an actor.
You know? You think it's a little easier?
Madonna gets beat up.
Oh,
and I
know.
Think Madonna,
she gets beat up as an actress, though, doesn't she?
She does.
Yeah, I mean, they just crucify her. Now, Kevin Bacon's interesting. We had Kevin on.
That is a very talented man.
You know, and I think maybe because it's he and his brother, mm-hmm. so maybe he takes some of the heat mm-hmm. off of his brother, so yeah. they're a lot more forgiving.
Yeah.
But he admitted, he said, you know, I know people come to see me as Kevin Bacon.
As Kevin Bacon, yeah.
The actor.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
You know, they want to see me either fuck up or, you know, see if I have the goods.
Yeah.
You know, now you've got Juliette Lewis. She's out there doing her thing, and she's got some good reviews, you know. Keanu Reeves, he was playing bass.
Billy Bob Thornton, Bruce Willis. Bruce Willis is, you know, John Goodman.
He can play the blues.
He can play the blues. Yeah, he can. It's great.
And I think why not? You know what?
A hundred years ago, people were jealous. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, you know, why can't an individual have? I operate from a different level. I like to see people succeed, and if I can help anybody succeed in anything, I will do that. And I love to see people with extraordinary talent that can sing, that can write, that can dance, that can act, that can race cars, whatever it may be. I like to see people excel. That's just a part of me that I don't know where it came from, but I like it. I think it's great. I would love everybody to be successful in everything that they did. It'd be a much better world to live in, you know? So this stigma or this, you know, whatever jealousy, whatever it is about, you know, well, he's an actor, he can't sing. You know what I mean? Go back to old Hollywood, Fred Astaire. Go back to Dean Martin.
Go back to
Frank Sinatra.
Those guys were all doing everything. And they had their shows in Vegas,
absolutely.
Man. Wouldn't that be great to have shows
Wouldn't
in Vegas?
Wouldn't it be nice?
Go back to that old school.
Elvis Presley.
Those guys had fun, didn't
they? The King. Oh, my God. I always said that if I could ever pick my time of living, I wanted to be in the Brat Pack. I want to hang out with Dean Martin. I want to have a glass of scotch and a cigarette with Dean Martin.
Sing some songs.
And Frank Sinatra.
Man, and then play golf the next day.
And play golf. That's what
I want. Hang out with beautiful women.
That would be, if I died and went to heaven, heaven to me is Frank, Sammy, and Dean smoking, playing golf, and having a scotch. That's heaven, baby.
I concur. As a Viking, as a fellow Viking, nothing wrong with that.
And Marilyn Monroe on the side.
Yes, there's nothing wrong with a beautiful woman on your arm.
Nope.
Nothing wrong with that at all. Now, how do you guys deal with that temptation as a soap opera? You guys have some serious, beautiful women on the set constantly in all states of dress and undress. And, you know, you guys get to know each other intimately,
well,
literally.
The reason why I do daytime is because you can cheat legally.
You heard it here first. This man is quite honest.
And I go to the head writer every day and say, wait, I need a hotter chick. You got to come on. I can see Thorne doing a three-way.
No, Tommy Lee said, forget three ways.
Yeah.
You got to do four ways.
You got to do four ways.
Because, you know, three ways, somebody's left out. In a four way, everyone's enjoying themselves.
And I know him. I've had a six way. And these, you know, I'm going to get in trouble for this one, I know.
Come on, man, don't be shy.
I was on all my children and single.
Right.
And as my wife said, there's no whatever happened in the past happened in the past.
That's right.
I was on all my children, and I flew in to see my father, and he lived in Destin, Florida at the time, and I had 2 weeks off for hiatus, and I flew in there, and we met him there. We were walking on the beach, and there was like six girls from Atlanta sitting on the beach, and one of them came up and said, aren't you the guy on All My Children? And I said, yeah. Well, needless to say, about 9 hours later, we were after partying all night. I got a hotel room, and all six of them and me spent the night together, and I'll leave it at that.
All right.
So you take heard it that, here first. Tommy. You can have four. I'll take six.
All right, we'll give Richard Johnson a call at page six, man. He's always looking for a good angle.
let me go on the record saying I've never told that story on air to anyone.
Okay. I'm glad that you're so honest.
My dad's wife knows that it's true because I called her to pick me up at the hotel. I couldn't get home.
I know you're not going to get divorced out of this.
She'll never hear it.
Nah, she'll never hear it. She's not internet savvy. And hopefully Army Archer won't pick up on it or some shit like that, man. You know, you've got some movies you're working on, some things in development. You're trying to move out. You know, there's some big guys that move from your area, from daytime into film with a lot of wind behind their sails. Yeah. There's no reason why you can't do that. What's holding you back, or what are the frustrations?
Well, I think you become complacent, I guess. You know, you go from waiting tables, making, you know, $1,500 to $2,000 a month, and then all of a sudden you're paid $5,000 a day. You get used to it. After, you know, I've been doing this for 14 years now, employed. I'm one of the very lucky, and God, you know, I get up every morning and thank my lucky stars because it's, you know, I know the blessing that I have. I don't take it for granted, and I'm egoless as far as that is concerned. You get used to a lifestyle, and why walk away from it? You know what I mean?
And especially in acting,
it's a job that I get paid. I get a check every week. I don't have to go out and do a film and wonder when my next film's coming. And it's security. I know that my kids are going to have the best. I know that I can do my charity work, which is a big, big part of my life, of giving back to what the community has given to me, and you know, with the Hurricane Katrina thing, which was absolutely a disaster, because, you know,
tell that story. That you told me that story last night. It's an incredibly heartwarming story, which is a very one-on-one personal. Rare that we get those personal one-on-ones. I don't mean to embarrass.
No. It's fine. I just don't. I do it out of the kindness of my heart. I don't do it for, you know. And my big thing was when this all was going on, I was really very upset at people having to come and bring camera crews to show that they were doing this or doing that. They would call ahead to the Dream Center here in L.A. because the Dream Center got about 250. They weren't refugees. Let's get this on the record. They are evacuees. They're not refugees. They're evacuees. They were, you know, their life was stolen from them by Mother Nature. But they would call the Dream Center and say, oh, you know, whoever's going to show up, like Paris Hilton. Who is Paris Hilton? Paris Hilton is famous because of a bad blowjob.
Yeah.
Let's go on record and you know, get this out in the open. But she's going to make her walk through, or whoever's going to walk through. You know, Dr. Phil came in, gave money to people. Bravo. We don't need to make a show out of it. I happened to go down there because I wanted to go to New Orleans. I was born in Crowley, Louisiana, and I was raised in Metairie. And, you know, where we
just
went
north
to school. Yeah.
Just north of New Orleans.
And I rode my bike on those levees. My brother, my mother, my father, all of us. Every weekend, we're riding our bikes on those levees. I know the levees are broke. But I told my manager, I said, you know, I got to get to Louisiana because this is where I'm from. These are my roots. These are, you know, this is something I got to do. And I can't imagine one day, just think about this right now. If we're sitting here and you're listening to what I'm saying right now, and all of a sudden I said, let's go. We're leaving. We're going to Minnesota. You can't take nothing and you ain't coming back because you got nothing left. That's it. Let's go now. Forget about your wife. Forget about everything. Let's go. Imagine that. So I go to the Dream Center and I'm walking and there's a family. And this guy's there leaning against a railing holding his three-month-old little baby. And I see him and I see his wife sitting down on a chair holding another three-month-old baby, twins. And they have three other kids playing. And I see them, and I walk on by, and they're showing me the Dream Center about what they're doing. And I come walking out. Well, the wife goes, hey, that's Thorne. And I stopped, and I went over to her, and I said, yes, I am. And I said, you guys, and I looked at Terry. His name is Terry Forche. And it's going to bring tears to my eyes. But I looked in his eyes, and I said, when did you guys come in? And I've never looked through a man. And I've never had a man look through me, but this guy was so hollow because he had his wife, his three kids, and his three older kids, and his two infant twin babies, and he had nothing. He is in Los Angeles, in downtown Los Angeles, at the Dream Center, with nothing. Nothing. And I just leave a $2 million home. I leave kids who are, you know, who are whining because they're not getting what they want or whatever. And I see this, and I'm like, you know, we got to do something. So I adopted them. And they're doing fine. Let's just leave it at that. They're doing fine. They're set. And New Orleans was a disgrace.
Yeah.
It was not handled properly. And you know what? I don't think it's because we're dealing with poor black families. I don't believe that at all. I just don't think that the government in its right mind was ready to deal, because we're too busy trying to get oil, if you want my personal opinion on it, you know. But this is a city that, if you've never been there, I urge you to get off your ass and get there, because New Orleans and the people, Cajuns, Creole people, are all about fun. They're about life. They're about music. They're about food.
But it's
definitely about party.
It's no question about that. But it's also about mixing and blurring cultures.
Absolutely.
And you know, we need more of that to break down these barriers.
Exactly.
Man.
It's black. It's Spanish,
it's
and
everything.
It's French.
Yeah. It's
exactly.
Great.
And
it's
you
great.
And it, you know it. You don't
the
see
Creole
you don't
culture.
See color down there.
Yeah.
You don't. And it's very funny, because if you can actually teach yourself to have a conversation and not look at the color of a person, that I'm talking to a black man, I'm talking to a yellow, I'm talking to whatever, Indian, white. When you can teach yourself to do that, then you've accomplished something, because that's what we do in New Orleans. That's what New Orleans is about.
And there are few centers left like that. New York is a city like that. Mm-hmm. L.A. is segregated.
New York is big time.
Yeah.
L.A. is segregated.
And, you know,
big time.
My kids grow up in a city where they don't look at any race as being different than them. It's just, you know, it's just all blurs together. And,
yeah.
And I think then we start to compartmentalize and stereotype and all this other stuff.
We as an people really need to do a big check, because if you think about it, if you want to think about the United States of America and how proud we are of it and which we are, this country was stolen from the Indians and built on the back of slaves. If you want to call, you want to get checked, that's what it is.
Well, maybe it's our karma then that all this shit's happening now. This imperialism where
could
we've stepped on people.
You
can't step. You know, the internet, the cool thing about the internet is it eliminates the gatekeeper.
Yeah.
Anyone can hear this. Yeah. Anyone can participate. You know,
which
it may
is
not
a
all be good
thing.
Art. It may not, you know, it is what it is. But the point is that everyone's equal.
Yeah.
They're all in the same
And
footing.
We are. And that's the thing that I try, you know, because I deal with people with these, you know, and when I first started this interview, as I told you, we all have egos. There's no doubt about it. We do. I treat everybody equal. Because I'm on television does not make me special. It does give me perks, but it does not make me special. I'm lucky, and you know, I guess after seeing the things that I've seen, it's like, you know, you don't want to ever take anything for granted, especially life and especially what you've been given, you know, because when you see, when until you look into somebody's eyes, and this was a moving thing for me, and it has caused me to probably be a little more. You know, we're spending so much money in Iraq when let's take those billions of dollars and put it back into America and get rid of the homeless. Let's build homes, build compounds, or you know, and with, you know, insurance, you know, medical. My God, there's people today that don't, you know, can't even go to a hospital because they don't have medical insurance. And we're worried about another country. I'm getting political on you guys.
That's all right. We interviewed Gore Vidal the other day, man. He did the same thing.
We're worried about other countries, about, you know, put the money back into our country. This is my beliefs. You don't, you know, I'm not telling you what to do, but
you can be passionate, Wynn.
Yeah.
That's all right. You're allowed to be
passionate.
I look at this shit.
I drive through downtown L.A. and I see homeless people, and then I realize that we're spending, you know, Bush wants another $800 billion to go back to Iraq. You know what I mean? Doesn't make sense to me.
No, it does. You hit it. It's oil. You know, we live in a society, in a world, the oil is huge. It fuels every aspect
fuels
of our lives.
Yeah.
From the clothes we wear to the movies that we watch.
You know
and
what
it's
this,
not
this
gonna
whole
go away,
world
man.
Needs to... We need to get everybody to move and live in a ganja-filled farm. And have everybody smoke ganja for one day. So we can
expand their consciousness.
World peace.
One love. Windsor, I want to thank you for being
being on the culture catch for enlightening people who really don't know this world. I think there are a lot of subgenre pop culture fans that don't watch soaps. They don't know what it's all about. They don't know.
And I urge them not to watch it. Do something more with your time.
Yeah, exactly. But you know, the fact is that you're working. You've you signed on to do a job. You've done it.
Yeah.
Obviously, you've been on for 14 years, so you do a good job.
Thank you.
You're very charitable, and continued success in all your endeavors, bro.
Thank you, man. It's cool.
Thank today's sponsors, Liberty Boot Co. for the coolest cowboy boots on the planet, Liberty Boot Company. Check them out at www.libertybootco.com. My friends, Frank, Lynn, and the boys at Final Draft. You got a script to write? Finaldraft.com has got the solution. And our web host providers, WebHSP. For all of your web hosting needs, it's WebHSP.com. This is Dusty Wright for the Culture Catch. We'll see you soon. Converge is the word.